All right, guys, we are live. G'day, welcome to another episode of The Tripod and another episode in our series of interviews. And today, we're going to be interviewing Brent Douglas. Many of you guys may know him as the anytime try scorer expert in the Facebook group, but he's also into horse racing ownership, and it's also his birthday. Happy birthday, Brent, mate. How are you doing today?
Mate, feeling good. Got the first beer of the day out of the way, so, you know, can't complain.
That's the way. I thought I'd join you, and I did actually have a drink before we do this pod. So, yeah, happy birthday to you, mate, and thanks for joining us once again. And we're going to get into horse racing ownership today because, obviously, you own a few horses and that kind of thing. And a lot of the punters in the group, I know, obviously, you know, they punt on all sorts of shit. But horse racing ownership is one of those kind of different things that I think a lot of people would like to get into. And I guess just a little bit of background on yourself, mate. Obviously, you're probably a punter first and then kind of got into horse racing ownership. How did you get into, I guess, punting first of all?
Probably from my old man. I think it would have probably been since I was about 10 or 11. You always have those little muck around bets with your dad in the lounge. You might put a dollar on this, put a dollar on that. I guess from there, just sort of, you know, went from there, because every Melbourne Cup we'd have, you know, time off school, or I wouldn't go to school and actually stay home and watch the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
Even now, I take annual leave days so I can just watch the Melbourne Cup. Like, I've never actually been to it live, but it's been one of those things where you just develop it from your own, I guess, parents doing it as well. So not many other people from outside of the family have really been into it, other than my dad, which is interesting. So
yeah, right. So obviously, I mean, you started in horse racing, I guess, or you started in kind of rugby league betting. I guess it was horse racing, first of all, right? Like you said, you watched it in like primary school. I remember when I was in like grade 5, 6, we'd take time off to watch the Melbourne Cup during class, you know?
Definitely started with the horses, and I think because it was always Dad telling his story about the first horse he owned and stuff as well. So he had a horse called Regal Reprimand back in the 80s, 90s, which didn't do much, but
yeah,
it was one of those things that's like, oh, yeah, got to get my own horse now as well. So that was always a thing on the radar to do.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously you went into, you know, you started punting on them just casually and obviously got a bit more into it. And then, so what decided or what made you decide to actually get into the ownership side of things? Because I would say that I read somewhere that, you know, there's only like 20,000 people in Queensland that actually own a racehorse, and obviously there'd be way more than that that actually, you know, punt on it. So what made you kind of transition or decide to transition from punting to actually taking that next step to owning one?
Well, we actually bought my first horse when I was 18.
Yeah, so right.
I don't even know how I got everyone convinced to buy into it, considering I have zero background in buying a horse.
Yeah.
So I pretty much saw something on one of these, I can't remember, it might have been called Cyber Horse at the time.
Yeah, right.
Selling a yearling, I think it was $3,000, so it was $300 a share. We pretty much got the whole Douglas side of the family involved and some family and friends. That was the first horse, and it was absolute rubbish. So it was a learning curve.
Yeah.
It wasn't through a syndicate at least, so you learn through the trainers and who you're paying and things like that. So you learn that aspect without having to go through a syndication. And from then, I think we bought our first one again in 2013.
Yep.
And that was with a group of mates, because the idea was we would go to the races more often if we had a runner.
Yeah, of course.
Again, the theory was sound. The practice, not so much, because they ended up running out at Scone and things where we were nowhere near. So
right.
Yeah, that's how it started out. And then we've sort of branched out from there.
So, I mean, obviously you started up, you said you bought a couple and, you know, they were kind of duddish. So now, I mean, you're pretty much well and truly into it. So how many, I mean, you probably know off the top of your head, but how many do you actually have a share in now?
Right now, I think it's about 10.
Okay. Yeah, wow.
We just added one, I think it was on Friday. So
okay.
But again, they're all smaller shares. So we've probably had a max of 10% in any one horse at any time.
Yep.
So, and we've got, like, say, we've got Solstar as one of ours. We have five people in at 5%, so there's 1% each.
Okay.
Plain Seal, we have 10% in, but we've, again, broken that out to twos and ones. And most of the others would be between me and Webby. So me and him would just have 2.5% each for the most part.
Yep.
Amoretti, who won on the weekend, thank God.
Yeah,
we
right.
only got 5% in that, so that's, like, again, 1.25% in that. But
sure.
At the same point, we're of the thought of we'd rather be in something that we can watch every other weekend than have like 100% of something that's running for 3 months and then not again.
Oh, definitely. And I assume it would be similar to, I know you used to dabble in the stock market and stuff like that, and I do as well. And I assume that horse racing is kind of a similar thing where diversification is best, you know, spread the risk a little bit. So, I mean, in terms of syndicates, you know, how many different syndicates are you sort of involved in or have gotten your horses through? And, you know, which ones have you found to be the best from people that are looking to get into the game?
Yep. Number one, probably for me, would be Australian Bloodstock. I think we've got five of them at the moment.
Yep. And they would be the biggest, I guess, in Australia, would they?
Oh, they'd be up there. I mean, I think Derby and that can challenge them, and maybe even Triple Crown, depending on, you know, what horses you're buying and what value you want to buy at. So, but I think they buy horses really well and place them well. So they have most of theirs based with Chris Lee. So he can go up the Gold Coast, he can stay in New South Wales, so he can sort of split where he wants to send horses.
Right.
So I guess you've got a coverage of where you're going to send things, and I guess you can plan better by having two different states in mind instead of just the one if you're just based in the city. But I guess Waller sends them up there anyway. So it depends how much money you want to spend. But the closer you are to the city, the more you spend on a trainer anyway.
Yeah, that's a fair call. And I mean, so you've got 10 at the moment. You obviously know them all quite well. Which has been kind of your most successful horse, or let's say, you know, your best wins and losses? Can you run us through maybe a couple of them?
Yeah, well, I guess most successful from having bought from a yearling point of view would be La Polga and Wonderbar.
Okay.
They're not super successful at the moment. La Polga started to go good recently. I think you might have seen on the punters.com.au where he got killed by another horse without a jockey on him.
I did see that.
Shocker. but then Wonderbar as well, she's only 3 years old and she's starting to come back now, but she's won about 130 or 140K in prize money, so she'll only get back as well. So from the yearling point of view, those two are the most successful. From the tried horse point of view, still up for debate. Longbottom's doing all right at the moment. She's actually accepted against Solstar in Canterbury on Wednesday. So we've got two of our horses running against each other.
Nice.
Which I think two different stables, obviously, in two different syndicates. So you don't have much say in that anyway. But at least we've got double the chance of winning, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
Yeah, tried horses, I'm not sure at the moment. I've got some... I guess I rate Plain Seal, which we just bought. So he's going to be racing at Flemington in 2 weeks. So I'm looking forward to that one. He had a good trial the other day. So
yeah,
we'll wait and see. But you just never know until the hit race day.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, mate. Now, I guess we'll get into, you know, the nuts and bolts of it. Now, obviously, you know, I'm a punter, you're a punter. And, you know, a lot of people that you'd just meet on the street, I guess, would be like, oh, you can't fucking make any money punting, you know. And I guess from my point of view, I would say differently. And a lot of people, I guess, from a horse racing ownership point of view, would be like, well, you can't fucking make any money horse racing, you know, or horse race ownership. But what would you say, I guess, to a first timer looking to get into this? Now, would you say that it is, from your point of view, like an informed investment, or is it just you got to kind of think of it as, you know, a bit of fun, a bit of, you know, money on the side that they're willing to lose? What kind of camp would you sit in there?
I'm absolutely in the hobby and a bit of fun.
Yep.
Purely from current experience as well. So you'll have some where they pay for themselves, but you're not going to get many that are going to actually make you money in the long run.
Right.
I guess the good thing is you, after doing it for a while, you can sort of minimize your exposure or your risk by purchasing different animals depending on what you're trying to achieve. So Webby and I will basically make a lot of gut calls, but then we'll also try and make a lot of calls where we think we'll be able to resell mostly fillies and mares, obviously, because they're going to have more residual value as a brood mare compared to if you're getting a colt that it's basically gelded straight away and then it's not going to be able to do much else for someone else other than race.
Right,
so,
right.
Again, it depends on your exposure and what you're trying to do with it. But, yeah, I'd say it's definitely more a hobby than an investment. Australian Bloodstock do a lot of good ones where it's probably more an investment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you've got your Musters years and, you know, that Brave Smash, Toast and Stardom, and a lot of them that actually ended up as stallions and now are in the breeding barn.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you get the right one there, but again, you pay for that privilege as well. So
that's it.
If you've got a lot of money to get into those, because I think Musters year was about 55K, he came out and won $1 million in the e-ball pretty much just after that. So I think he paid for himself and won here. Then he ran the Melbourne Cup and ran busted.
Yeah.
So again, you don't know what you're going to get, but you're just trying to recoup your purchase price really. And then the ongoings are just what they are. So
yeah, and that's it. And I feel like the fund would almost pay for it in itself, but you're right. I mean, like, you know, obviously you can throw a dart and you could get lucky with some of these horses, like, you know, that sell for 20 grand or whatever and end up winning millions. But at the end of the day, I guess you're kind of mitigating a little bit of the risk by doing a bunch of research, because I do kind of wonder who, you know, what is that, you know, typical kind of person that would get into horse racing ownership. And it seems to me it would be like, you know, blokes like us that are around, you know, punting age, 20 to 35 years old, you know, males looking to kind of get into it. Would that be kind of what you'd say there, like the average person that you'd find that you'd be sharing a horse with?
Again, depending on where you are, because I mean, Australian Bloodstock have a lot of like loyal clientele who'll just buy into everything.
They've been doing it for
ages. They've got a lot of the older sort of retirees sort of section. And I guess having been to the races, there's been a lot of older men who have been buying the shares, but I guess they've been doing it for a long time too.
Right.
But I guess it depends where you're going with. I think Derby will probably get a lot more of the, you know, the males between 20 and 35, and even more, probably more females and stuff too, depending on what type of horse they're trying to sell. So they also have female-only syndicates aiming for a lot of that Magic Million stuff. So it just depends on what sort of syndicate you go with, but it could be anything. Everyone seems to want to get in.
Yeah, that's it. And it does seem like a lot of fun. I mean, I've never really, you know, bet on the horses an awful lot, but I know, I mean, a lot of the guys in the group, I'm sure, would love it. And I mean, for someone getting started out, because I would assume that most people listening to this don't own a horse currently or a share in some, but look, I know it's kind of a, you know, probably a broad spectrum, but I mean, for someone looking to start out, like, how much are we talking here in terms of cost, you know, on average? Maybe give us a range of, you know, the upfront cost and maybe the average kind of upkeep cost while it is racing or spelling and whatnot.
I guess the upfront cost is going to be your biggest one hit. And again, it's going to range depending on what the syndicate or trainers pay for at the sale. So they obviously go to the Magic Millions, Inglis, Karaka sales, and they pick up things from 20 grand to, you know, 1 mil. So depend whatever they pay for that, but they obviously had a bit of markup here or there and cost for travelling around, insurance, all that sort of stuff. But I mean, the lowest we've probably paid is about 1100 for 5%, but the highest we've probably paid is probably about 9 grand for 5%.
Yep.
So it honestly just depends, and it depends on, I guess, what promise you think that horse has. Because I wouldn't spend $9,000 on a gelding, 5%. As a colt, you might, but then again, they could get gelded next week.
Sure.
The one we spent about 8 or 9 grand on was Longbottom. So she's a filly mare, 3-year-old now. She was racing a couple of listed races. So the hope is there to at least recoup that 8 or 9 grand once we eventually sell her in a broodmare sale.
Yep.
And invest in something else. But again, just trying to, I guess, limit your exposure there. In terms of ongoings, for 5%, if it's in training, it's probably about $250 a month you should budget for.
Okay.
But that can flex up and down. So, I mean, depending on, you know, if it's doing a lot of track work or if it's had vet bills and things like that, that can go to 300. It can come down to 200. When it's not training, it's usually between about $50 to $75 if they're just, you know, in the adjustment, just walking around the paddock. So it's a variance. But again, if you're going to just budget for it, if you're doing $250 a month, you'll end up averaging it out in the long run anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, that doesn't seem too bad. I mean, most people, you know, would be, you know, spending $50 or $60 a week anyway, punting at least. So, I mean, that doesn't seem, you know, it doesn't seem like an awful lot for the fun of it, that's for sure. And I mean, for yourself, let's say, I mean, you know, I know you mentioned you sort of bought one, you know, 5% for 1,000 and 5% for 9,000. So there's quite a range there. But in terms of what you normally aim for, in terms of how much percentage you're trying to buy, is there like a minimum? I mean, do you kind of waste your time, or are you even allowed to buy like a 1% share, or is it only kind of 5% and upwards from there?
No, recently you can buy more of the 1% and 2.5% shares.
Okay.
Probably about 12, 24 months ago, you can only buy a minimum of 5, but they've sort of started opening it up and be able to create syndicates for those littler shares for people to buy in.
Yep.
Personally, we try to keep at least 5% just for a bit of interest. Right. But again, between me and Webby, we've probably got 2.5% in a horse any given time anyway.
Right.
So we're probably holding 2.5, and we'll go down to 1, but anything under 1, we'll just... Yeah, I wouldn't bother.
Right. And you kind of decide, like, I mean, obviously you do your research and all that sort of stuff. Do you kind of, I mean, if you find a horse that you're like, this one's going to be a fucking top-notch one, would you say, like, you'd be like, oh, this is like a 3-unit bet for me, like I'll buy 5% rather than 2.5, or 10% rather than 5%, you know what I mean? Or do you kind of just always buy the same?
We probably try and sit at the same, but again, it's just depending on cash flow, because obviously we're throwing all this money at these horses. And normally we're trying to use the prize money we get to either buy more horses, or once we sell another horse, to buy another horse. So we're trying not to put any more money in that we don't have to. So, yeah, I mean, there are instances where we might do that. Like, I'd probably more do that to a tried horse than a yearling, only because I can get a better grasp on what their potential is in terms of watching trials, watching previous races, looking at sectionals, things like that. So I guess you can get a better idea with a tried horse, and you might go, well, I'll take 10% of that, like playing seal for one, because we only bought into that probably 2 months ago. So he's a risk. He's a seven-year-old gelding, but he's running in group races and good races. So he's running in Flemington 2 weeks' time, you know, knock on wood.
Yeah.
So at least he's going to be in some good races you're going to be have some interest in. So,
So just out of interest, how much did that set you back?
That was about $5,000 for 10%. So, okay. And that was gelding as well, like I said, and he's 7 year old. But just because of the level he's at in terms of his rating, he's going to be racing in good races.
Yep.
So it's probably more exciting that way as well. Because, I mean, the best thrill I have is when we're sitting in city races. Not really, I guess, even like on the weekend, we had Amoretti at Newcastle. While it was exciting, it was a maiden at Newcastle. So it's not exactly thrilling to the level of a city race, but it's exciting nonetheless, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, like, you mentioned, you know, you look into Australian bloodstock a lot and they're kind of a solid one to go with, but you've gone with a bunch of other syndicates, obviously, with your purchases. So, I mean, for anyone that's starting out, obviously, without getting in touch with you, if they're looking by themselves, I mean, how do you kind of find a good syndicate or a trustworthy syndicate? I mean, do you look at, you know, past results, or are there resources that you'd look for in order to find a solid syndicate to go for?
I guess in the past, it was just me just browsing Google and obviously being online, watching races, because obviously Australian Bloodstock have a horse in every second race these days. You know, they're sort of a reputable syndicator, but you got the same with Derby. I mean, Tricolours at the moment are going good. We've been with Blue Blood, Dream Thoroughbreds. Like I said, we've been through a few. But in terms of just, you know, finding the right fit, it's just up to you to do your due diligence. I mean, and it's like anything, what you're comfortable with. You know, are you comfortable with this person that's telling you or selling you a story? You'll soon learn, you know, who you want to actually be aligned with and who you don't. So, and that'll just come through the process of just buy. And the thing is, you'll buy a horse knowing one you want to buy too. So you'll see something and go, I want, you know, I'm Invincible and I want this, and it's at the right price. So you'll just go with it and see how you go. But again, we're probably aligned mostly now to Australian Bloodstock, Michael Costa Racing and the Goldie, Tricolours at the moment, and we buy still a few with Derby. So we try to sort of stay with the same ones, but it just depends on what horse pops up as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, once you've, you know, bought a few from, you know, a certain syndicate and you kind of, you know what they're about and they're good, then it's easy enough to stick with them. But in terms of finding one initially, I guess, you know, would you, I mean, how easy are they to get in touch with, like, a syndicate? You find a horse that you kind of want to buy, seems like a decent syndicate. Can you, like, can you ask them questions and stuff, and will they actually write back? I mean, are there good questions to ask a syndicate before actually plonking your money down?
Yeah, absolutely. What you should be asking for is the PDS, the product disclosure statement. So that has all the information in terms of what the costs were of the horse, who it's going to be trained by, or your, you know, I guess what you're going to be up for in terms of what you need to do as part of being an owner. There's also aspects of that in terms of insurance you need to worry about in case, you know, you buy a yearling that ends up, you know, dying in a, heaven forbid, a paddock accident or something. So, and again, it depends on how much risk you want to take in terms of also paying insurance for something that, you know, are you that worried about taking it or not? So there's a lot of instances where me and Webby will just say, let's not worry about the insurance on this one because it's a gelding or whatever else, because the resale value is not going to give us much anything. But yeah, it's just really up to you.
And is that, I guess, that would be quite important, because I mean, I know, you know, for myself, like, you know, investing in whatever stocks or an ETF or something like that, let's say, for example, and there's like hidden costs that you wouldn't normally find out just by looking at it straight up. So, I mean, have you looked through PDSs like that and been like, oh, fuck, you know, here's some management fees or some weird hidden fees that kind of, you know, an average person wouldn't bother looking through?
The management fee, absolutely. So that ranges from Australian bloodstock do $22 a month pretty much, but it can go up to nearly $80 a month depending on who you're syndicating with.
And that's so, just what? That's an admin fee of some sort?
It's an admin fee for them basically doing communications and things like that. Sure. So like you can always be up for an extra $800 a year on a share depending on what percentage and what rate they charge you for the privilege of admin, which to be honest, you could pretty much do yourself for a lot of. I mean, again, I might be just big noting it, but I find it all just stuff I can find online or do it myself if I needed to anyway. So
sure.
How hard is it to forward a video of a horse? You know what I mean? Like they're getting it from the trainer. Like why not just let the trainer send it direct to me and it costs me nothing? But
yeah,
like that's something to look out for in terms of the PDS because they can get out of hand pretty quick. And it, for me and Webb, I want to avoid paying those management fees as much as possible because it's just dead money for nothing. So
yeah, for sure. And I know you mentioned kind of, you know, you've bought a yearling and you've bought tried horses as well. Now, in terms of buying a yearling, let's say, where there's no, you know, they haven't chosen a trainer or whatever, I'm assuming, like, once you buy into a yearling, let's say at an auction, I mean, what information do you actually know? Do you know where it's going to be trained, what the who the trainer is going to be, or does the syndicate decide that after it's bought?
No, the syndicator will arrange all that, and that'll be in the PDS before you can actually.
So you know already, yeah.
You technically can't officially buy a share until you receive the PDS, which will have all that information in it.
Okay, yeah, that's a fair call. And I know you mentioned kind of yearling versus tried horses. You've had experience with both. What would you normally buy? What would you suggest for a you know someone starting out to buy? Is there one that you would prefer over the other?
Again, it depends on what your objective is. Do you want a chance at having a stallion and you know, going into the breeding barn or are you just happy to have a knock up a win, you know, Grafton or Scone or
do you
win? Like it's really luck of the game. You don't know where you're going to hit when you hit one. I guess the tried horses, you get a better feeling about what you're going to get into. So, I mean, for an example, Tricolors picked up Pecans from the Godolphin Dispersals for $50,000. So, it's not that she was a bad horse. She was just, you know, excess to what Godolphin were trying to do. She went on and won a Group 2, and I think they ended up selling it for another $400,000 later on. So, that's a great investment for those guys that got in at whatever the share price is, probably $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it just depends. Like I said, I guess the best thing is just to keep in touch with the syndicates too because they always throw out all these different things that they've been buying from the sales. So I guess if they're sending you the emails, then you can make it, you know, I guess, review and due diligence on what type of horse you're trying to get into. Like, there might be certain bloodlines you want to give you a favorite horse or favorite stallion that you've always wanted to have. So just keep an eye out and, you know, something will pop up and you'll grab it.
Yeah, and now in terms of a tried horse, I guess, now, you know, I'm no expert on this either, but, I mean, it seems strange to me that if, you know, if someone was selling a tried horse, you know, you're not going to get any money for it unless it's, you know, a good horse and no one's going to pay for it unless it's a, you know, I guess if it's a shit horse, why would you get rid of it? I guess I'm wondering why someone would sell a tried horse if it was decent and why someone would buy a tried horse if you're like, oh, you know, maybe it's something sus here. Like, why would they be getting rid of it if they thought it had some potential?
I guess the main point where people would sell tried horses would be if they've bought a stallion prospect in terms of bloodlines and things like that, but it's been, I guess, not that great on the track or it needed to be gelded to at least get its head right.
Yeah.
Once it's gelded, they're no good to those guys and they don't want anything to do with them half the time, so they'll just sell them for whatever they can get and, you know, that's just where they end up with some of these syndicators and then syndicate them out. So the one we probably bought Friday, you know, was recently gelded, was a $420,000 yearling though, was gelded, actually had a bleed attack last race. So one more bleed attack and he'll be retired.
Yeah, right.
But it was a 5% share for $1,700. So for the $1,700 risk, we were prepared to see he's going to head out to Cody Morgan in New South Wales country. So he might, you know, hit the country circuit and he can get his prize money back within, you know, a couple of races, providing he's placed well and actually got the ability post-gelding. So he looked okay when he wasn't gelded, but he was just a bit all over the place. So we're banking on the gelding, hoping to, you know, put him in the right direction.
Yeah, and I guess that is a bit of a risky one because, like you said, you know, one more bleed and they'll retire it. So, I mean, is that the only... I mean, that's obviously a bit more of a risky investment, but is that the only horse that you've kind of bought that's had, you know, an injury history, I guess?
Probably. I mean, we've been in horses that have had... I guess, medical issues in terms of we had Deitch who had a throat surgery and it took him a while to come back from that, but yep. he came back and was fine. Outside of that, I probably wouldn't buy a lot that had anything to do with their leg injuries and things like that.
Sure.
Just because, obviously, that's the money maker.
Yes.
But again, saying that, horses have come back from injuries and gone on and done great things. So it's just depending on how much risk you're willing to take, really. So it's totally up to you.
Yeah, and in terms of risk now, not just with the horses, I guess, but like going back to someone new starting out, and I assume there's a million things that you could do wrong, but you mentioned a few of the trustworthy syndications, but I would assume there's dozens and dozens of syndicates out there. Now, some of them, maybe you've had experience or maybe you haven't, but are there untrustworthy syndicates out there and you know, some that you would definitely stay away from in your experience? Or
There's nothing specific that comes to mind. I mean, there's a lot of people now who get on, obviously, social media and your Facebook and Instagram who are posting all these horses because they want to be the next syndicator as well.
Right.
But it's up to you to do your due diligence, right? Like, you'll soon figure it out. And if you get their PDS, or if they don't have a PDS, don't buy a horse from them.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
I'd definitely be looking to review a PDS anytime you can, because that has every bit of information you need to do in terms of what you need to do as an owner and what they'll do for you as the syndicator as well.
Yeah, okay. Now, let's say, okay, you've gotten into it, you've bought the horse, you've got your share, you've got your 5% share. Let's say you've bought a yearling, obviously with a tried horse, they're already racing, but let's say you buy a yearling. Like, how long, you know, on average is it between, you know, actually first investing at the auction and actually, you know, it getting to the racetrack on average? Obviously, a lot of, you know, some of them don't make it, but, you know, on average, how long have you had to wait till it actually gets to the racetrack and starts racing?
So definitely for a yearling, it can take 12, 18 months.
Okay.
Again, depending what sale you're buying from. So if they're buying from the Magic Millions Gold Coast sale in January, then you'll probably buy a share, say, March. And if they're not an early running two-year-old, they could be running January the following year. So you'll be waiting at least 12 months. And if they're not a two-year-old, then they're a three-year-old, you're waiting another 6-8 months on top of that. So from a yearling point of view, it could be anything.
Yeah, of course.
But you just don't know. But from, I guess, if you want instant satisfaction or gratification, tried horses are probably something better to get sure. into. Because one of the examples for us was buying Baluti. So we bought it on the Friday. It raced on the Saturday and won at Sandown or Ballarat. I can't remember which.
Shit, that's
which
right.
In one day, you pretty much get half your outlay back.
Yeah.
So at the time. But, yeah, it depends because different horses mature at different times. And, again, injuries strike. So we had a potentially early running two-year-old with Michael Costa who ended up having a few joint issues. So she went out to the paddock and had a rest, came back, sort of thing happened again. So she's been in and out, hasn't debuted yet. So still waiting. But like I said, it's part of the fun as well. Once they get to the track, hopefully they do something.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, and despite that, I mean, a lot of them don't make it to the track. But I would think that half the fun of it as well is kind of, you know, watching the horse, you know, train and get better and sort of on that projectile to racing. In terms of the syndicates that you deal with, I mean, how good are they at, you know, giving you updates? Because I assume that, you know, someone starting out, they'd love to get, you know, weekly updates or monthly updates or whatever with some track times and some videos and stuff like that. Are they pretty good at that? Or
yeah, you probably get one there in training. You probably get an update every once or twice a week.
Oh, okay. When they're quite often. When
when they're in spelling, you won't hear much from them at all. So you might get an update once a month and just be like, okay, yeah, he's trending well. He'll be back in the paddock or he'll be going to the pre-trainers in a couple of weeks. So there's not much you can really see of a horse sitting in a paddock anyway.
Sure.
But normally they'll send out a couple of videos, a couple of audio updates in terms of what the plan is or are they going for a trial? Are they going straight to the races? You know, if there's been an issue in terms of injury and they need to have another rest. So, yeah, they're pretty frequent for the most part. I mean, there's not any that are terrible. But, yeah, you probably expect maybe once a week to get an update once they're in training.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. I mean, that's a, you know, excitement for some people that are new to it. At least you get a little video, a little update every week or something.
80 plus horses. So, I mean, if they're going to be doing an update for horse every other day, so you know, I'd expect once a week. But if you're not getting once a week, that's not that good.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. And now you've obviously got, you know, you've got your 10 horses or whatnot that you mentioned. We'll get to some of your best experiences, I guess. And I guess I'll first up ask you, you know, your personal maybe best moment as a racing owner, if you have one.
Oh, best moment. I guess it'd have to be the two winners at Muswellbrook the same day. So, I mean,
shit, that's all right. Out of 10, yeah, right.
So, let alone having two running on the same day, but two actually winning on the same day. So
unreal.
I actually have a video with, what did I have? The old, the Passion Pop.
Yep.
So, I had the celebration Passion Pop after I came home from work.
Oh, giddy up.
Yeah, never got to go there to actually watch the race, but it's just, yeah, what are the odds of ever having two winners at the same track again? I don't think it'll happen. So yeah, that's probably the best one for me.
Oh, definitely. And that's, yeah, that's massive. And I guess just to give someone, I guess, a bit of perspective, I mean, how much sort of money are we talking here in terms of how much the horses won and your percentage and that kind of thing?
What's the question in terms of...
Oh, let's say those two running on the same day in Muswellbrook, you know, in terms of prize money and how much you netted out of that, do you have that off the top of your head or?
From 5%, depending on what the prize money would have been at the time, I think, well, I'm just thinking back to what Lepolga's been paid recently. So he probably got $800 for a win the other day, but that was the dead heat.
Yep.
That's for 5%. So again, you normally factor in about 10 to 15% take off the prize money for trainer and jockey.
Okay.
And then whatever's left, it's divvied up between the owners. So that's the normal rule of thumb anyway.
Yeah, okay. And so you've had obviously a few good ones. Now, I would assume you've had a few that you've missed out or you were close to purchasing and you didn't quite get there. Have you got any of those stories that ended up, you know, you were like, fuck, should have bought that one?
Yep, I've got two that spring to mind.
Yep.
One would have been an I'm Invincible with Dream Thoroughbreds at the time. So we just recently purchased Soulstar and they got an I'm Invincible for under the average price at the time. I think it was like under 200K for what they paid for him. I've requested all the videos. I wanted to have a look. I'm getting this. It was seven grand for 5% or something at the time. Okay. And that would have been probably our biggest outlay at that point.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of winners leading up to that point, so we ended up passing. It ended up being I'm Mortal, who went on to win the Blue Diamond Prelude. And now he's sitting at stud for, I think, 12 and a half grand a pop. So, you know, depending if you see 100 mares, you could be getting a mil a year.
Shit.
So that was disappointing. I guess the other one also was with Oz Bloodstock. They purchased Tactical Advantage.
Uh-huh.
So they had a 5% share for 15 grand. Me and my mate are just scrounging for cash at the time because, again, didn't have many winners coming in.
Yeah.
By the time we got to a point where we could say yes, they'd actually sold the share. So he's gone on and won another, I think, 600 or 700K in prize money. So he would have made back his money in a bit more. So that's disappointing. But on the upside of that is because we didn't get him, we end up getting Wonderbar. So okay, she's probably, you know, the next best thing in terms of what we like in our stable. So, you know, ebbs and flows. You don't know what you're going to get. It's all luck of the draw. It could have been a donkey too.
Yes.
I'm sure I've had plenty where I've missed out on purpose. But, you know, the two that spring to mind are the successful ones.
Yeah, that's it. And I guess it's like with punting. You kind of, you remember your bad losses more than you remember your good wins. That's for sure. And I know you've got one down here. Your biggest racing regret. You mentioned you had a winner and you didn't end up going to the races, but you wanted to.
Yeah, it was early this year for Wonderbar. Again, I live in Morningside, so I'm only, you know, a couple of K from the track.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the excuse was, but I just ended up going. I think I would have been going by myself too. And it was just like, well, you know, what's the fun in that? And I've just let it go. And I thought, oh, it's 1,000 metres, not the greatest distance by any means. Anyway, suffice to say, should have been there. She's gone out and fucking killed it.
Of course.
City race. And then I'm sitting at home going, why didn't I go? So, like I said, the funny thing is I've actually never been at the track when we've won a race. So I still haven't experienced that part of ownership, and I've been buying them since 2013. So go figure.
Maybe it's a jinx kind of thing. Like you don't want to go to the races anymore because you're like, fuck, if I go, they won't actually win.
And then I said to the wife as well. That's what I said. Oh, I probably shouldn't go because if I do go, she probably won't win.
Yeah.
And that happens, and you're like, well, why didn't I go? You know, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
Oh, so. Exactly. It's exactly like putting on a bet by accident or whatever. You hit the wrong button and that one never wins, obviously.
All the way.
Yes, 100%. So I'll get back to the ownership side of things, mate. Obviously, you mentioned you bought 10 or so. And I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but I mean, you know, how many of you kind of bought that haven't even made it to the racing level? And do you have any idea of, you know, let's say 100% of yearlings bought, how many would actually make it to racing level? Is it more or less than 50%, would you say, or?
Good question. I wouldn't know the exact figures. From our experience, we've been pretty lucky, and we've had pretty much every yearling we've had make it to the track.
Okay.
We did actually fly a tried horse that ended up injuring themselves in the paddock and didn't make it to the track. So instant sale, but luckily she was a filly or mare, so we didn't lose out too bad on that. You'd easily be looking at least 10%+, I would say, in terms of, you know, not being able to make it to the track. Like, I know there was a share with Derby a long time ago where they were selling for 10 grand for 5% and it didn't make it to the track. So I don't know if those people had insurance. So I don't know what happened to the horse, but it's not a great place to be in either. If you're spending 10 grand and then you're getting nothing out of it, like you're literally thrown against the wall. So again, it depends on how much you can risk to spend. And that's luck of the draw. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what's going to happen. Like, you haven't gone there personally to inspect the horse. You're not a vet.
Right.
So yeah, you just don't know what you're going to get at the end of the day. It's all luck, but we've been pretty lucky, thank God.
Yeah, sounds like it. And I mean, let's say you do invest and you are unlucky, and let's say this horse is, you know, not good enough to race after a certain amount of time. I mean, obviously, you know, the trainer probably knows and the syndicate knows, you know, this horse is not going to be good enough. I mean, who decides? I mean, let's say you all have 5% stakes. That's 20 people, 20 owners. Who actually decides, you know, this horse is fucked. Let's, you know, not keep plowing some money into this. Like, is it the trainer that says that, or do all the 20 owners have to kind of say, yep, we agree, let's stop this now, you know?
Well, effectively the trainer will go to the syndicator and go, you know what, he's not up to city class, or he's just not willing to run. So we had one called Danahi with Australian Bloodstock. It basically ran last in a trial, and they got to a point, they ran in a race, wasn't interested, and they said, let's just get rid of it.
Yep.
We sold it. But the good thing about Oz Bloodstock too, they have some of those promos where they offer like a new for old replacement.
Okay.
So if you don't win a race, basically you get another share and another horse, but they give you a couple of options in terms of what you get. So we actually picked up another filly, 5% of another filly they had. So it's only a yearling now, so we're still waiting on that one.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because I actually have a funny story. My dad has a mate, and he got into, well, he got into horse ownership, and he said, I'm going to buy a share in one, you know. I think he only bought like 5% or something like that. He lives down in Melbourne. This is a few years ago now. But it injured itself. And I guess everyone else and the trainer and everyone was like, fucking get rid of it. It's not going to race again. And he felt so bad. He's like, no, like, I'll take it. And so he took this fucking horse, and now he has to rent out a paddock and keeps it in the bloody paddock, and he reckons it's just bleeding him dry. So I guess, you know, you can't really become emotionally attached, I guess, can you? Because otherwise, you know, you'll be the one.
A lot of these syndicates have actually like rehoming fees in their syndicates. So I think Tricolours at the moment too have a $500 or $1,000 markup on their horses, but it should go to that horse to rehome them at the end of their racing career.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people like that. Like even with Deitch, it was trained by Stuart Kendrick on the Sunshine Coast. He actually took the horse into his own stable because he loved him that much. So
yeah, right.
They've got extra paddock room and things like that, which is good. So you always want them to have a good life outside of training. But like some of these horses, though, they're treated better than some pensioners.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I bet. And I mean, yeah, that's fair. And I mean, getting back to, I know you mentioned like the trainer kind of decides and the syndicate decides, you know, if it's time to kind of let this one go, if it's not good enough. But if it is good enough, I mean, is it the trainer or is it you guys as owners that say, you know, this is where we want it to race and when we want it to start racing? Or I guess that's mostly the trainer because he's with it every day.
Yeah, so for us, I just let the professionals deal with it
because,
you know, they've done this thing for most of their lives. They know what sort of plans to do, so I mean, trainers have a say, like you have your percentage vote in terms of, you know, if we want to name it this, everyone gets a 5% share depending on where you are. If it does come to that, if they say, look, we've got two plans for it, we don't know where we want to go, they'll put a vote out to the owners and the owners will vote based on your percentage. So the problem is you can have an owner as 51% and you've got no say anyway. So it depends on how much share you have. That's why you're better off buying with a couple of mates. In terms of being, have, I guess, more control in that aspect. But outside of that, there's no real aspect for me to make a vote to go somewhere or do something. We just let the trainer make the decision because they know the horse better than I do.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you mentioned like buying in with mates, and that would be probably a lot more fun, you know, being able to meet up on the weekends or whatever with your mates and watch your horse run. But for most of the horses that you've invested in, I mean, is there a bunch of mates? I mean, it's a quite a hefty investment. So, I mean, are most of the horses that you own a share in, is that, you know, included in with mates, or is it mostly just yourself and then a bunch of randoms?
No, no. So most of the shares we have, again, the 5-10% would be me and Webby. So yep. Webb Douglas Racing as it is. So we would be in every horse we have. But then there's others, like Soul Star, Plain Seal, where we've actually sold some shares to friends and stuff who are interested in getting an ownership. So, yeah, for the most part, it's just us two in the majority of them. But yeah. Again, that costs your costs too. Like instead of paying $250 a month for me for 5%, we're paying $125.
Yes.
And yeah, that, and I guess it's easier for me to manage too because I can take money out of their accounts and pay other bills.
Yeah, fair enough. And I mean, I'm sure it can add up, you know. So I guess for someone starting out, you probably are better off just going like 1.25% or something like that.
Anything's better than nothing if you want to get that.
I do feel like it's more, you know, like you said, it's more for the fun of it. So I mean, you know, for someone just starting out, having a 1% share, you know, it mitigates a lot of that risk and, you know, and a lot of that cost, but it's more the fun of actually watching it race, and whether you have 1% or 5%, the thrill is similar, you know?
It's exactly the same. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, for me, for a percentage, it's still your horse. It's still running. If it's going out and winning, happy days. Yeah. It's not winning, oh, I'll kill you.
Yeah, that's it. And I do wonder, like, I mean, you've got a bunch of horses now. They're all racing. Like, do you actually bet on them yourself? I mean, do you get some... you know, inside info from the trainers, like it's doing really well. And would you plonk your own money down on an actual bet on your own horses, or is that kind of doubling up a bit too much?
I'm a bad gambler, of course. I'm so it is probably, you know, doubling. I guess Amoretti on the weekend, I didn't have a lot on Amoretti. I had $25.
Yeah.
So the stable was spruking him up like no tomorrow. But after watching a couple of his races, I'm like, oh, I've got to give him another watch. I can't get on him too hard. And then he's gone out and won at $3.80. I guess the one before that was Longbottom winning at Ipswich. She was racing against Shout the Bar in Sydney and things like that. So she was always better than what she was going to race out of Ipswich in a BM60. So I had a plonk on that, which was good. She got up. But I've probably lost more than I've won, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean most people do on the horses, that's for sure. But so obviously there's the fun side of it, you know, just getting to watch your horse actually race, you know, that you have a part ownership in. But is, you know, is there, what would you say is like, you know, the other perks of kind of being a horse racing owner? I guess there'd be, you know, obviously you've got your community of owners, and I think that would be pretty fun. But do you get like, you know, free tickets to races and that kind of stuff when they race, or what kind of stuff, what else do you get?
Yeah, for the most part, I guess it is the race day experience.
Yep.
In terms of you get the owner's passes and your mounting yard passes. So, again, minimum 5% share should get you an owner's pass and a mounting enclosure pass so you can take two people in. So that's what's good for me. Maybe we can both go to the same sort of race day. But I guess it depends on what type of race day. So if you've got a 1% share, technically you shouldn't have an owner's pass. But you can get it through the syndicator by just talking even to the racing club and stuff too. If it's, again, a country meet, they're going to let you in every day of the week.
Sure.
If it's like a Melbourne Cup meet, you're probably going to have a bit more problem. But if it's in the Melbourne Cup, they're going to let you in because it's your horse. You can't exactly knock back 1%. It's the same thing. So, I guess it's really just that experience of being in, like even Wonderbar raced in Randwick on Melbourne Cup Day. So I flew down for that one because she was racing in the city, obviously.
Okay.
But you got to go to the theatre of the horses, you have a chat with the jockey, the stable rep. And the thing is, we were half cut at that point too. Bet. So yeah. Mate, I'll just go, do whatever you want. You know what you're doing. It's all good. And then you'd actually walk down the tunnel too. It's like the closest thing to actually playing sport where you're walking out for like a grand final or something.
Yeah.
You go through the tunnel, pop your head out. And too bad she ran third because I ended up, I think, about $500 on her at the end of the day because cracking everything.
Yeah.
But like I said, that experience and just just adrenaline pumping, just watching your horse go out and again run at a city meet and actually perform well. Like again, I went to probably Doomben a while ago where Longbottom was running in a first stakes race.
Yeah.
I was amped up as anything. She's jumped out of the gates, bucked, and pretty much took no part in the race. I think she ended up 50 lengths last.
Oh, Jesus. So,
yeah, you can get yourself psyched up and you get disappointed pretty quick too.
Yes, I bet. Now, you mentioned you go to some of these big city meetings or whatever, and how many, you know, obviously there's like some people that have a 5% share, or like yourself, they're splitting a 5% share. Now, are all the, you know, are most of the owners, do most of the owners actually go and watch? Like, do you all sit together or something? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, well, to be honest, you only really meet when you go to look at your horse in the mounting yard. So, and even then, like, I wouldn't know all the owners in these horses because most people won't exactly travel, like, if you're coming from Sydney to Brisbane or vice versa. So, you meet a couple of people and you know you're them all the time that are always there, but there's not, I wouldn't think, you probably get about, again, if we're talking people-wise, if there's 20 people, you probably get 5 people to a race day.
Okay.
Depending on the race day. So, if it's a stakes race, I'm assuming a lot more people would go out. I'd definitely be going.
Yeah.
But if it's just a maiden at Newcastle, you might get 2 or 3. And I've seen some of the winners' photos, like where you've only got 1 or 2 people there, or even just the trainer and the bloody stable hand. So, yeah, again, it depends on your commitment and if you live local, because it's just so hard to get to some of these country tracks as well.
Yeah, definitely. And at least, I guess at least you're in, you know, you're in Brisbane. At least there's a few races here, you know, not as many as down south, obviously, but at least you can get yourself to some if they race around here.
Well, that's what's good. Chris Lees as well, because he goes to Gold Coast, he'll come up to Brisbane, he'll go down to Sydney, and Michael Costa's the same, because he's on the border of the Goldie, he'll bring him up to Brisbane, he'll go to the Goldie, he'll go south, so it gives me a bit more options as well, and if I have an excuse to go down to Sydney, I'm all for it.
Oh yeah, absolutely, mate, and why wouldn't you? Now, you've been, you know, obviously been investing in these for a little while now, and you've had some success, as you said. Now, any plans of opening up kind of your own syndicate, or and maybe what would be involved in that if you did decide to go down that route?
Yeah, I mean, unofficially, we're sort of running it with mates at the moment anyway.
Sure.
Especially because I think you need a finance license to be able to do this sort of thing. So unofficial, okay. Right? But we've always been interested in doing something similar. And it's just more to get people, you know, who are actually interested in racing to get involved. So that's why we did the Plain Steel recently, where we sold 1% shares to friends who were just interested in, you know, finally owning a horse, and what a horse to be in. It's one that's going to possibly race the stakes races, and at least it's racing on a Saturday meet on the weekend. So before COVID, we had all these grand plans of doing events and getting a bus and doing all this sort of stuff. So that's the other part of what we want to do too, is just, I guess, run an event sort of program as part of the syndicate where you go to race meets or go to sporting events and things like that. So it's a bit of a dream, a pipe dream at this point, but we'd love to get into it at some point.
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, that would involve, you know, if you were going the whole nine yards, you'd have to go to those auctions, I guess, and do all the research and bid on them, I guess, and that would be tricky, I guess. Have you ever been to one of those auctions?
No, I've done it online.
Have you? Yeah.
So you can do it online where, again, depending on what they're selling, because I think English Digital had about 600 lots on last week, so there's a lot of people just trying to get, because I guess the problem is with COVID and stuff at the moment, they're not sure what the market's going to be like when the other sales kick up. Right. So they're just trying to sort of disperse some of their inventory, as it were. But I haven't actually been to the live Magic Mirror. I've been invited a couple of times, but I've just not been able to go down. So it's sort of, again, another dream. I'd like to go to a Magic Millions weekend and just hang out there. It'd be freaking fantastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned you want to start up your own syndicate. You haven't quite yet, but you have sold, you know, certain percentages, little percentages, 1% stakes to mates and that kind of thing. Now, you're obviously very knowledgeable about it. So, look, if people in the pod group want to start investing in a horse or want some more info, I mean, are you happy to chat to them? And if so, how do they get in contact with you?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Anyone can just get me on Facebook. I'm normally, I'm a slow replier, but I get to you eventually. So as people would know from the NRL stats and e-time stuff, I always reply. So if you send me a message, feel free, and then I can get in touch with you there. That's fine.
Excellent, mate. No, I'm sure you will get a few messages, because I know a bunch of people that, you know, I've got a few of my mates that own horses that haven't quite done any good yet, you know, that own a multiple horses, but I know a lot more that, you know, want to get into it, but would just need, you know, kind of that push or a little bit more information to feel a bit more confident in it. Mate, that's awesome. All the info that you've given us is fantastic. Now, flicking switches for the last bit of the pod. Well, I know a multi got posted in the pod today. Someone won like 18 grand off $50 on a Greyhound multi.
I saw you climbing in.
You would have seen that one. So, look, I cannot let you go without giving our viewers a very important message about never cashing out. You had a horror show. Was it last year?
No, it was 2017 when I was living in Sydney.
Okay. Take us through it, mate, and maybe we can have some pod followers learn from your mistakes.
well, effectively, I think it was like about 12:40 at night. I must have been on the piss somewhere. I can't remember. But I put on a three-leg multi. First leg was Jack Ringwald to score first goal. Second one was Nathan Ross to score first try. And third was Latrell Mitchell to score first try. I think I've woken up about 2 o'clock the next day. Ringwald's got up. Ross has got up. So I've got $25 on a three-legger. I think the cash out was about $1,400. And for love of money, I don't know why I did it, but I took half of it out. So the prospective pay was about $23,000 and change, the all three getting up. But in my head, I must have been going, man, what are the odds of me getting three all on the same day? Anyway, I've cashed out half for about $700. Gone and watched the footy. I'm a Roosters fan too, so it was even worse. But then Latrell's gone in over the Eels and finished the bloody trifecta, and I still end up with $11,000, but it could have been the 23-odd, which would have been fantastic.
Yes, and at least you only cashed out half, to be honest, because you would have been fucking spewing if you did the whole lot.
Yeah, I've been in the position lately, though, the last couple of weeks on five-leg racing multis where I've got to the last leg. I've had $1.70 favourites. I haven't cashed out, and they've all fallen over. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't in this sport. So it is what it is.
No, you're absolutely right, and it always is that way, isn't it? You're like, nope, I'm not going to cash out this time, and of course...
Ever since that multi, I've never cashed out. Can't do it now.
Yeah.
I had a bloody NFL multi, was it last year or the year before? Cash out was $5,000, but with the bonus would have been 10.
Fuck.
And I'm like, can't cash out. Last leg, Seahawks get rolled. Happy days,
of
great.
Of course, yeah. It's always the way, I'm telling you. And like, but it is true, though. It's like, you nail one of them. Like your three-leg, you know, first goal scorer and first try scorer multi, you nail one of them and it makes up for all the other ones that you would have fucking cashed out halfway through, you know?
You still got to, like, you know, you got to be in it to win it. So throw those little randoms out and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Look, we're getting up there. We're getting up there to nearly an hour, mate. But that's pretty much all I wanted to ask you. So people, if you are interested in getting into horse racing ownership, you know, feel free to contact Brent. He's he's a very knowledgeable guy. Not very knowledgeable about cashing out, but very knowledgeable about horse racing. So
bad punter all around, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna get some right. I can deal with that.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're looking to get into this, it's a bit of fun. Message Brent. Thanks very much for joining us, mate. Any advice that you want to leave us with before you get out of here?
Not really, mate. We're all good.
I think we've pretty much covered everything.
Feel free.
Yeah, we think we've covered everything, mate. Well, look, thanks again for joining us on your birthday. Enjoy your birthday beer or perhaps a few more. And get into it, mate, and we'll see you in the group.
No dramas. Thanks, mate.
Have a good one, buddy. See ya.
See ya.